If this was perfect, it wouldn't be.
Hello, this is Pedro de Permit, and thank you for listening to the Scalf Podcast. I know I sure as hell would never listen to it, but enjoy it while it lasts.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Scientific Anglers. For over 80 years, Scientific Anglers has been at the forefront of innovation. Sharpened by experience, pushing the boundaries of material science to make your line stronger and more durable. They've been testing their lines in the most demanding environments with the world's best anglers. Those who demand the best choose Scientific Anglers. I've been fishing their lines for years. Over the past couple years, I've had a chance to try out some of their new Magnitude series clear lines, and they are awesome. I can't say enough about them. Go give them a try.
All right, let's do it. Let's do this. Brandon, can you give me your best gong noise?
Dong.
And that, my friends,
it's a sound bath.
It's a sound bath from Brownie. We are about, what would you call this, 45 yards from the Watauga River in what I would call the most beautiful podcast setting I've ever been able to experience.
It beats that hotel room in Atlanta. It beats... Did I black out during every Scoffcast? I don't remember where we recorded any of the other ones. We did one at Deerwood.
We did one at the.
We did one in in Alan's living room. That was the longest one I think we ever.
Yeah,
did.
That's true. And that was
the one about Helene.
Yeah, that was a Helene podcast. That was a little over a year.
Yeah,
less than a year. Could be over a year.
Less than. You're hearing a lot of voices, everyone. Let's tell everybody who we have on here. This is Alan. You heard Hank. In the
Me
background, Davis, who's sharing a mic with Sam, is here. Say hi, Davis.
Hello.
You heard Lydia in the background.
Hello.
Susan's here. She hasn't said anything.
Hello.
Brownie's lovely wife. And Brownie.
Hello.
Who you've met before, owner of Blue Ridge Boatworks, who has so graciously let us do this podcast at the lodge here 1 year later.
Welcome.
It's a beautiful, beautiful place.
Yeah.
Brownie, how did you come into possession of the lodge, and then how did the last year kind of go for you?
In 2007, I was 40 years old. I was rowing down the river all summer, freaking out about my career choices, thinking about my three sons that needed to go to college, et cetera. The campground on the Watauga River, was a sort of a midpoint way in our daily float. The owner of the campground was, graciously allowed me to use his bathroom facilities, which is very helpful, especially if I had a woman on the boat. And I pulled in, to use his bathroom facilities in the fall of 2007. He was over by the gate weed eating, and I went over and thanked him for allowing me to use his bathroom facilities, and he said, "Hey, you're welcome, and by the way, I think I'm going to sell this place." And so I asked him to give me a couple of days to talked to some people, and I met my partner slash boss, Tom Prestwood, at that point. And Tom came along and actually bought the whole property, and then asked me to be his partner. So he has never lived here, never operated this place, been a great partner. Treats me like a little brother, and we've been running this, built this place, and then been running it for 18 years now.
18 years?
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was that long. That's awesome.
Yeah. This last year sucked.
We'll get into that for sure.
Yeah.
That's the oldest lodge on the river.
Both rivers, right?
Yeah, you know, when we started, that's right, it was pre short-term rental world.
Yeah.
So there was no Airbnb and what's the other one?
VRBO.
Yeah, VRBO.
Yeah.
There were some cabins upstream that were available to rent. And then we built this, and it was meant to be, we would have built a really janky guys fishing place, and our wives, who are both named Susan, got involved and were pretty quick to tell us that no, we were not building a cheap fishing lodge. We were building a place that all the wives would be comfortable in and appointed properly, and so that's what we did.
I think you did better than that. This place is awesome.
Yeah.
I've floated by this place. We were talking about this earlier. I've floated by this place so many times. Never been up here. This property is beautiful. And Brownie has so graciously let the Dirty Scoff crew, plus Lydia, who's not dirty, come stay here for the weekend and go fish. It has been 1 year since Helene. There's been a lot of work that you've had to do over that past year to get it to the point that it is, and this tonight was awesome. And it was a would you describe it as a bit of a family celebration of all the struggle and everything you've been through to get to this point?
Yeah, and I would say you were really kind of the impetus for that, because you had sent me a text saying, hey, I want to bring Lydia up there, and at that point, we were not open and ready for that, but yeah. I felt like, okay, this is what we should do. And I just met you guys in the last couple of years.
Yeah, yeah.
And really just wanted to have a celebration of reopening and a family event. And so we just had like a few folks here, our families. Few local folks that we feel like are family as well, which is kind of how we got through this last year.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly,
what did this place look like post hurricane?
Not terribly different than it does right now. We had this really fun outdoor kitchen by the river that we called the Barbecue Shack that all of our clients really loved, and it was a function initially of us not wanting to be or knowing how to be in the food business. So we decided early on that we'd create a space for everybody to kind of do their own thing, not need to leave the property, be able to cook here, sit by a fire, have everything they needed to not leave after they got off the river. And that building got washed away essentially in the flood, and we've had this pavilion here for a while it's been underutilized for the whole time we've had it. We've had a few weddings here, we've had personal functions here, we've had our own child's wedding here, but it's not been utilized like it is now, and so we turned it into our sort of outdoor living space and a place for clients to gather. And
yeah,
and it's turned out pretty well.
It's a sweet spot.
Yeah,
it is.
Go ahead, Tim.
No, I was gonna say it is a great spot. This whole property is just such a neat property, so beautiful. Tell us a little bit about what y'all setup is here. Like, how much land do you have? Tell us about the cabins. I mean, we know where we're staying and what we've seen, but you know, for the people who have never been here before, tell them a little bit of what you offer here.
Yeah, we use the term lodge loosely. We've got cabins on the river, and then we've got another accommodation across the street, which is actually out of commission as a result of that storm as well, from a tree falling on that building or that house. So we've got four different accommodations down on the river, a total of 8 queen beds, all separate setups. They're appointed really well, extremely comfortable, you know, pillow top queen beds, and everybody has private bathrooms, and then really what it is, besides comfortable accommodations, it's a beautiful piece of property right on the water. Good fishing right off the property. Kind of a midway point on a float on the Watauga River. And I don't know, it feels like a special space for us. I mean, oftentimes we take it for granted because it's work and we work down here and try to keep it available and ready for clients. But but every once in a while, and tonight's a good example, we get to enjoy it ourselves and realize again, like, it is a nice spot. And people do show up here and go, wow, this is beautiful. And we don't have Wi-Fi, and so people kind of unplug when they get here. They're usually a little aggravated when they first get here, and then by the time the weekend's over, their stay is over, they're like, oh, that was great to not have full cell service the whole time we were here.
Yeah, Hank was definitely pissed when he got here. Yeah, <right. some> Wi-Fi.
I was just texting, a couple of my buddies were texting me on the football game, and I was like, what's going on? I'm not able to watch. How's it going? And they're like, where are you? I'm like, I'm at this awesome place with no Wi-Fi and no TV, and it's great, and I love it. So it's kind of special to reconnect with what really matters.
I feel like in some of the early days, we had some, you know, longstanding clients that would fuss about missing ball games, and now I think everybody's just kind of used to it. And by the time they leave, they're like, oh, that was nice to not be so connected.
Yeah. So going back, you were talking about the barbecue shack when Sam was asking you about the accommodations, because we didn't really lay that out. But the barbecue shack is closer to the river than the cabins are. We are what I would call, from what you told me, equal distance from the river from what the barbecue shack was.
Yeah, that's right. We're kind of right on top of it. Yeah, we're at the beginning of the trophy section on the Watauga River, or the quality trout zone.
Mm-hmm.
Halfway through the property, the river takes a 90-degree bend, so we got this great piece of waterfront, and yeah, the shack was something that we developed over the years. It was literally a shack that we ended up building a deck on and a kitchen inside, and a big fire pit and a gas grill and all that. So it was just a fun place to hang out. And then it got washed away. So it felt like we've got this other really great pavilion that we built a long time ago, and decided to put our indoor kitchen or outdoor kitchen in this space.
Yeah.
Cassie. So yeah, we're right over the water. Say again.
We still have the fire pit.
We do still have the fire pit.
Great little fire pit.
It's an important part. I'm going to ask you a question that I've been annoyed with for everybody asking me for the past year, but I think it's good for context here. And it's, how high did the water get? I have been so annoyed with folks asking that over and over again. I don't know why I feel that way. Probably shouldn't, but I mean, is that 30 yards away from the river, the cabins, the barbecue shack? You were telling me that the water was 3 feet into the cabins.
Yeah, so we're I wish I had a few numbers for you to,
I mean, just guess.
To tell you, but yeah, we I mean, we've been here 18 years, so we've seen floods, and we've seen floods that got on this property and mm-hmm. ran down the road and washed a little bit of gravel away, but we had never seen anything like this. And so I mean, this structure that we're sitting in right now sits I mean, it's 12 or 14 feet off of the water, elevation wise
higher,
and we had water running 6 inches across this floor that we're sitting in right now. I don't know what the actual cubic feet per second number was on the Watauga. I want to say somewhere in the 40,000 CFS range. We knew it was coming. We actually had clients here, on that Friday morning, the 28th, and I showed up down here, and they had fished the day before in the pouring rain all day, caught fish, had a great time, fun group of guys from Ohio. They were here for the weekend, so they fished on Thursday, came in on Wednesday, fished on Thursday, were fishing on Friday and Saturday. I got down here early Friday morning, and they are all standing on the porch at the cabins. Water's running down the driveway under their cars, and they're drinking coffee and saying, "Are we going fishing?" And I was like, "Y'all have got to get out of here right now."
Under their cars.
And we've got a great picture.
What's Davis showing you?
That is showing me right now. We did the classic group shot, but we're all standing in knee-deep water right by the fire pit.
Wow.
So you do classic, like, here's the group photo beside the fire.
Yeah, it's kind of eerie how, like, happy everyone looks in this picture. It's true.
Not knowing what it's about to, you know.
Well, they were funny. They were like, "Oh, we're not going home. We're here for the weekend." And I was like,
y'all
are going
to be driving food trucks up into the mountains for the next
I think those guys ended up going to the Carnegie in Johnson City and staying for the weekend. All my sons and Davis, we all started moving furniture and moving everything we could and duct taped the doors. And we did everything we knew to do to prepare for the flood, and had zero idea that it was going to be what it was.
Yeah.
Because the river was already out of its banks.
Say that again.
Before the hurricane got here, the river was already out of its banks.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you
ever
here?
It was already flooded. It was everything, and at least up in the mountains, and obviously we're in an area that's a product of that. Everything was blown out, muddy, out of its banks, and then the hurricane rolls in and just out of nowhere, 10 times that, right? So people just thought it was a big storm, and then all of a sudden, the flip of a switch, it was like, this is, nobody alive has seen anything like this before here, river-wise speaking.
So the normal protocol for the dam operators when we're in a flood situation is they shut the dam off. And that helps us not get flooded. And those guys explained to us later that they have all kind of flood models, but they didn't have anything – no models whatsoever that could predict what we were actually getting.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, territory they'd never been in before. So the typical response is shut the dam off, and it keeps everybody from getting flooded downstream. At some point, Thursday night or Friday morning, they realized that, the fear was that the Watauga Dam was going to breach. And if that were to happen, then, you know, it's catastrophic loss of life in Carter County and Elizabethton.
Yeah.
So they opened the dam up. And we got warning of that. We knew that they were doing that.
10,000 CFS.
Yeah, and we just didn't. And so we were kind of getting by with the flood water. And then when they opened the dam up, that kind of took us past the point of normal flood.
Yeah.
Plus the dough, right?
Yeah.
So you're 10,000 out of the dam, 20, I think, is what was estimated coming down the dough, plus the other tributaries that feed the Watauga, you're looking at 35, 40 grand down here.
Right.
Unfathomable amount of water.
Yeah.
Were you ever here, Davis? You were around, right?
Yeah, I was definitely around. So I live up in Elk Park. I live on the backside of Beach Mountain. And my wife and one of our dogs was out of town, which turned out to be a blessing. And I had my other dog, me and my other dog were at the house, and hurricane rolls in, storm rolls in, and we evacuate in the middle of the night. And I'd hook up the boat, grab the guns, grab the dog, and roll out, drive to Ingles and Elizabeth and sleep in my truck in the parking lot.
I forgot really? That part.
Yeah. I mean it was 3 a.m. Like, where are you gonna go?
Right.
It's like, well, nobody's there. Wake up, hurricane's here. And I'm like, all right, well, I gotta put this boat somewhere. So I go to Brownie's house and drop the boat off. Brownie's like, well, scrambling, you know, we got clients at the lodge, there's a storm rolling in.
dams rolling big water. We got a lot going on, and it was just total chaos, right? And so drop the boat, load up with Brownie, run a couple errands, go to the lodge, get these guys out of the lodge like we were talking about just a second ago. And it was, you get down here and you see it out of its banks. I mean, this river's come out of its banks before.
Sure.
And at that point, we were down here, and I was like, wow, that's big water. And at that point, Brownie and some of the other guys were like, well, I mean, we've seen it like this before. And then 6 hours, 8 hours, 10 hours goes by, and you're like, that water's going to keep going. Next thing you know, you're standing at the gate looking at water going by. And the gate's behind every structure down here, and you're like, whoa, okay, this is a little bit different, right? Obviously, we've all sat around and talked about this hurricane a million times, but it's still hard to comprehend. But yeah, we were around, and that ultimately transitioned to, once we got our heads around it, to, all right, well, we need to take care of some folks that can't take care of themselves. Like, we need to make sure things are right and things are taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that looks like, doesn't matter. We're going to do it. So we did. And it was hard. It's hard on a lot of people. It's hard on the people that put other people before themselves, whether that was mentally, physically, or financially. I mean, there's a lot of people that are still in the byproduct of that event, and we're talking a year later on the day.
Yeah.
There's still people living in tents. Wherever that is in Western North Carolina, there's still people there. It's a hard thing to comprehend, man. It's devastating. To me, it gave devastating a new meaning. You've heard people talk about storms and events all the time, but it was like nothing like that. It's scary.
First real natural disaster that I've like experienced in such a significant way,
especially in the mountains.
Yeah, ever, for sure.
Sure. Were y'all in Brevard, Alan?
I was actually in Montana when it all happened. I had to fight tooth and nail to get a plane ticket back here because I didn't know what was going on. Had no idea.
Interesting.
Drove up from Charlotte and then went to work.
Scary spot to be in.
Yeah. Yeah. Lydia was at home hanging out, living her best life, pruning plants, playing with the dog.
No, dogs were happy.
Yeah. No, I had no idea what was going on. She was like, oh, we're going to get some rain. Got out of the woods, talked to her the day, like the night right before, and then nothing after that. Had no idea. Had her parents calling me, her sister calling me. What's going on? I don't know. Can't contact anybody. That was interesting.
My sister got married in California in October, almost 1 month after the hurricane.
Yeah.
And we're totally in fight mode, survival mode, taking care of not only ourselves, but everybody around us, or at least attempting to. And that was one of the biggest, that was a huge struggle. Like, I got to go to California to be there for my sister and support her and get married and be a part of that and do all that.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I got people 2 miles from me that are dying. They're like, their driveway's gone. They can't leave. They're out of food. It's like that, and that was the least of it, right? I mean, there's, I don't know.
Yeah, it was. I think it was hard for a lot of people to come back at different rates, right? Like you saw, like some people were able to come back to normal within a week. Some people it took 2 weeks. Some people took 2 months. Some people still not fully recovered from it. And I think that gives people a lot of guilt. You know, like, why was I so fortunate that I got to recover from this so quickly while everyone else? Like, why do I get to enjoy my life now that everything's back to normal for me while there's other people who are still suffering? And I think that's a natural part of any disaster like that. But, what struck me when I came up after the storm was that People seemed to be happy to be alive and were, they seemed to be enjoying themselves in their helping. Even though there was so much devastation, I feel like having something to do, having people to help, and just like being glad for what they had was inspiring. And I didn't really feel a lot of sadness, I guess, when I visited and volunteered up here after the storm. That was one thing that struck me. Obviously, you know, there were other places where there was immense sadness for a long time, but that was also the nature of the storm, right? Like, it hit so many different areas in different ways. You go across the mountain and the creek never rose, whereas next, you know, on over. Yeah, next ridge over, and the whole mountains fell off the side. So yeah,
it's a brutal thing to think about. It's a hard thing to think about, but if that type of event happens anywhere, this is one of the best places for it to happen to. And I say that because the folks of Appalachia and the mountains, the product of those mountains, are some of the most resilient people you will ever meet. I mean, like, hours after the hurricane, my neighbors were like, I've been waiting on this for 15 years. You know, it's like it's like, I don't know, man. These the people up here are just like, they do not quit. They do not give up. They are not scared. They are not beaten down easily. It's one of the most catastrophic events we've ever seen. And these people are just like, we got it. It's nothing. We'll figure it out.
Absolutely. I want to shift, because this is something that we had talked about almost a year ago today. I'm curious to get y'all's perspective. We were all very curious about what the fishing was going to be like a year from now. We said that exact thing on this podcast. I mean, we were fishing not too long after, caught a few trout, but you know, there's rivers that probably aren't the same that I haven't fished, and there's rivers that probably didn't change at all. But in general, what have you guys seen?
Well, I mean, I initially thought there is no way there are many fish left in this river.
In the Watauga.
And then, you know, the Nolichucky's close by. It's a great smallmouth fishery that we all fish. That got water levels that no one had ever seen before. Took a hit as bad as any river I've ever seen. Got annihilated. And I was convinced that these fisheries were ruined.
Mm-hmm.
And they are anything but ruined.
That sediment sat in the water from September 27 to February. It was nothing but just, it looked like an English chalk stream all through winter.
Where? What river?
Watauga. Yeah.
So there was this fascinating event of suspended sediment that was really in Lake Watauga that ended up being in the river as a result of coming out of the dam. And apparently the particulate matter, the turbidity is so fine that it just sits there. And
part of the water.
And so there was a lot of conversation, a lot of educated conversation about how do you get this lake to settle so that the river clears back up. There was talk about all kind of different ways to intervene. I think in the end, nothing ever really was done, and slowly but surely it did settle out and clear up eventually. And I would say most fishing guides would say that it's one of the best things that ever happened to the river. It just cleaned up. It scoured out all the years and years and years of, you know, dammed river. So it doesn't get natural catastrophic floods or natural annual floods. So things have been tweaked a little bit from their natural progression, or natural cycle. So this flood kind of, I think it cleaned out the river in a lot of ways that it probably needed it. Yeah.
A purge.
Yeah, purge. Purge is a common term that we saw a lot or heard a lot. And I mean, I still have this conversation with clients on a boat almost every other day. Was it's almost something that this river needed. It's a hard thing to say, but it pushed a lot of bad out. And it brought a lot of good in, especially because we have the Doe River as a tributary.
Mm-hmm.
Freestone River coming out of Roan Mountain that was brought in a lot of good nutrients. And it brought in a lot of good just health and new to the river. I listened to a podcast put on by the North Carolina fisheries biologist. And they were talking, these guys are down the coast, and they were talking about the wildlife and the fisheries post hurricanes. These guys see hurricanes all the time.
Yeah.
Speaking in bass in particular, they were saying that the nutrients that are brought in post hurricane or hurricane like systems is exponential. The growth rate on these fish that happen post hurricane is significant. I think in the next 8 to 10 years, I don't know how that translates to trout, but
yeah,
in bass in particular, in the next 8 to 10 years, and there's got to be some correlation to trout, you'll see a significant growth rate. This year in particular, TWRA and other biologists did studies on the South Holston as far as population studies.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen one of the highest population of fish in the South Holston that we've ever seen. Huh. Now, the South Holston didn't get affected by that hurricane as much as the Watauga.
I was curious about that. I wasn't sure.
Because a lot of that water comes out of Virginia, and by the time that hurricane got to Virginia, it was more or less settled out.
Sure.
Kind of like what Brownie was just talking about. A lot of fish got pushed out, but there is more of a population of fish in the Watauga than what we initially expected when that hurricane happened. I think this river is stronger than what we all thought it would be.
What did it do for the bug life?
Have That's what seen? I was going like, to ask, yeah.
You know, obviously cleaning out the riverbeds and everything through a flood, have y'all seen like much better hatches, insect life in the rivers now since then?
I don't necessarily think that we've seen better or necessarily worse hatches outside of the spring caddis hatch. So due to a lot of that sediment that we saw in that or post-hurricane coming into the spring Mother's Day caddis hatch, it choked out a lot of bug life. And so at that point, you know, we had sort of what, as a fishing guide, we would call a mild caddis hatch this year. Like, you know, there's people catching fish on dry flies. That's a time where you see brown trout that you're not going to catch the rest of the year eating dry flies. And it's like, that's time to go get them, you know, March, April, May. That's why we're booked up as much as we are in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, we were kind of on edge. We didn't know what the rest of the year was going to look like based on that. That was the first example that we had of a product of that hurricane. So we had sediment so long, choked out a lot of those aquatic insects in the water. Again, more hatch than what we thought were gonna hatch. More fish were eating those flies than what we thought were gonna. We just didn't know. I mean, but you can sit there and speculate all you want. As the year progressed, it just continuously settled back into what we would call a normal year.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you saw your consistent blueing olive hatches. You saw your consistent sulfur hatches at this day and age on the Watauga. And there was a time where sulfurous didn't really hatch on the Watauga. Now you're seeing prolific hatches. They're rare, but they happen.
Yeah.
Blue wing olive is pretty consistent. Other mayflies coming off. Obviously, a bunch of midges. Late spring, post caddis hatch and the Mother's Day caddis hatch. Spring into, we're in September now. We've had really good bug life. We've had good fish eating bugs. I mean, as a fishing guy, that's what you're looking for, is bugs to work with, right? You go out in the river and you start fishing flies that you typically throw with no bugs hatching. Those flies don't work. You better keep you better keep changing, right? Until something hits. But if you got bugs to work with, then you can kind of cycle through the flies that you think or should know work. And we've had those days more so than what we thought.
Better news than I think we would have said a year ago. I mean, I fished around a decent bit over the past year. There's only been one place that I've seen that I was like, shit, this got affected. And that was very small feeder creek tributaries on a southern slope of the Appalachians, where it's not where it's coming out of the mountain at 5,000 feet, 6,000 feet. It's kind of tumbling water at 3,000 feet where it could have gained some momentum. And I was like, well, I would have caught 50 fish here and now I've caught three.
Yeah.
Now maybe I sucked that day, but I'm gonna take a guess. It was probably a little bit affected. But other than that, I personally haven't seen anything at all the fishing that I've done. I caught smallmouth where smallmouth should be, caught trout where trout should be, and it's been good. And I didn't think I'd be able to say that a year ago.
Well, it's kind of good. A lot of it comes back to where in particular you're fishing. You know, Hank brought up a good point of those drainages coming out of not only the western side of the Appalachians, but the eastern side of the Appalachians. You look at one drainage that just got totally annihilated by the hurricane, and the next ridge over didn't see a drop of water coming down that drainage.
Yeah.
And so that directly relates to what's going through my head right now is trees on the bank.
Yeah.
Ecosystem on the bank.
Well, you got to think about elevation, and you have to think about watersheds as a whole rather than, like, you think about recovery in a main stem system like the Watauga River, which is like a source population for the feeder streams that you're talking about. Like, recolonization happens from, it's not like there's like a high mountain stream that's making all the trout that then trickles down into all the other streams around in the area. The main source population is in the main stem, which is the most resilient population. One, because it's the largest. Two, because they have the most cover. And then the further up into the higher order streams that you go into the mountains, like the higher elevation creeks that you're talking about, those are always going to be the slowest to recover because that's at the periphery of the population, the metapopulation, which is the group of interconnected sources and sinks, and like the dynamics of those populations are necessarily linked to how they're spatially organized within a watershed. So you have like I said, the main source and the main stem, and then recolonization, which is the recovery that you're talking about, is originating from those main stems, and the farther away you get from that main stem, the longer it's going to take to get recolonized.
Dr. Hank, fisheries biologists.
I do have a PhD in this, so I do kind of know what I'm talking about.
I think you should start a career in technology in the meta world, speaking of metabiology.
Well, that was a fascinating part of this whole thing from a fisheries perspective and also from an industry perspective. You've got the South Holston River that's 20 minutes from here. It was largely unaffected by Helene. And then 20 minutes in this direction, it's, you know, this river was devastated. And we've got a giant crew of guides who all fish both rivers. But there's a crew of guys that really rely on and fish the Watauga as their mainstay. And that whole crowd was out of work immediately. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of it you were able to sort of pull it together and morph over into South Holston Fisheries. But our little business here at Watauga River Lodge, we were done. My whole crew of guides that work with me all the time, I mean, it was tough. It was over. And as was the Watauga River as a fishery for the whole of last, you know, of 24.
40 plus days.
But we were also right on the edge of it ourselves. I mean, you drive 30 minutes further south, and those places, I mean, people, you know, lost everything in other places. Susan and I talked about it a lot. Our home was intact. Our family was intact. Our business was gone, and that was tough. But we didn't lose life. We didn't lose homes. We didn't lose our children. I mean, a lot of people had it bad.
Yeah.
Susan's the best, y'all, by the way.
Susan, do you want to say anything? She just gave me a look. Get that mic away from me. Well, I'm glad to hear the fishing's good. I'm glad to hear it's going well. For real. I mean, it's been
all saw barely any evidence of that today, though.
That is not true. Our boat did.
We saw evidence.
How many smallmouth?
I'll try to control the weather a little bit better.
How many smallmouth did y'all catch today on the name redacted?
Over a dozen, maybe.
Not enough. Seven or eight, all between 16 and 18.
Nice.
I mean, they're all eating topwater. It was great.
I had no idea what to expect, so I went into it saying, I told Davis, like, when we got out of the truck at the boat ramp, I was like, if I catch 116, I'll be happy. And I got it. It was foul hooked, but I got it.
Could you tell us about the coolest eat you've ever seen?
No. I wish Eric was here. Right before the coolest eat I think I've ever seen it performed by a smallmouth, I hooked
up. Oh, you didn't say that earlier. You said the coolest eat you've ever seen, not just a smallmouth.
No, I'm saying it was the coolest eat I've ever seen, comma, performed by a smallmouth.
Okay.
Right before that happened, I hooked into a pretty good one, and it spat the hook, and Eric Dickinson, he goes, that was a good fish, and like, I just jumped on him. I said, shut up, Eric. And I got my revenge.
Damn, that's a good one.
That's the worst thing.
I was like, that was going to be my fish for the day. And I was like, that one got a yelp out of me. But then, like, almost next cast, he launches a Excalibur bug to the other side of the river. We saw the fish because it was cruising. We saw a couple of fish cruising this, like, color transition, this, like, little grass bottom on a nice ledge full of clamshells so you could see the bottom. And you could see the smallmouth cruising upstream. So I saw it. Davis saw it. Eric saw it. He just put a perfect cast right on the nose, and the thing turned 90 degrees on it. Just rose. Sipped it like a... I mean, I guess how smallmouth do.
Like a trout.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much like a trout. I mean, their nose barely even comes out of the water. Mm-hmm. They just open up a cave underneath of the bug and draw it down rather than come up over the top of it. Anyways, perfect textbook eat, and we all, like, jumped up in the air. We rocked the boat. We were screaming, and I was, like, turning around to, like, wave at y'all. And then the screaming turned from yay into because then Eric's fish spat the hook out.
No.
And I thought for a very brief moment about telling him how good that fish was, and
you
I
should
not,
have done
I did
it.
Not do it.
The vantage point from our boat, Alan goes, yeah, don't celebrate too soon.
I did literally say that.
Honestly, that eat was worth celebrating because it was amazing. Like, landed fish or not, that was one of the coolest things I've seen on a river.
Clearwater smallmouth, man.
I agree. It was an epic eat. My favorite part of that whole situation was how excited and how loud we got. And I'm not going to name names, but there were two guide trips going on next to us. So there's four boats. Not a lot of people were catching a lot of fish, and we're over there hooting and hollering. for better or worse. It's a good feeling.
It's a good feeling.
I tell you what, today, one of the best times today for me was pretty early on in the trip. Alan just got on the sticks, and he'd caught three really nice fish real quick. And I jumped up front, and Lydia, you know, I was struggling a little bit right then. Lydia was struggling a little bit, just had a new bug on. And Alan's like, look, you got to do it like this. You got to wiggle it. You got to lift and wiggle it. Give me your rod. She's like, no. As soon as you touch the rod, you're going to catch a fish. He's like, just give me the rod. Let me show you. He grabs the rod, and I shit you not, instantly a freaking 15 or 16-inch smallmouth eats it, and he catches the – well, he hooks the fish.
I ripped a perfect hook set. Handed her the rod. Handed her the rod. She landed the fish. Yeah. I will say this, though. You missed this part. She made the cast.
She did make the cast.
She picked the spot, made the cast. She denied the fact that she wanted me to show her what I was trying to explain. And she ripped that cast out there, made a perfect one. It landed, and it just had enough time to drift, you know, 3 or 4 feet in between her going like, okay, actually, just show me, just so you'll shut up, basically. Handed me the rod and just poof. Rip
she
that thing.
Definitely
it was great.
Manifested that. I mean, she spoke it right into existence.
100%. 100%. That was hilarious.
That was great. That was great.
Couldn't have any better.
I'm not trying to hype this river up because I don't want a bunch of people come here to fish.
It's terrible.
It's horrible.
Too late.
It's the worst river on the face of the earth.
No, we really
the only
didn't
way
catch
you'll actually catch
fish
is if you book Davis to guide you on it. That's it. Only.
Or Brownie.
Oh, well.
Not me.
However, this river, when it's on, I am 100% confident this river rivals some of those northern smallmouth fisheries. When you catch a day where everything's just happening and happening right, you're looking at your average fish is 14 to 18 inches long. It's like, well, there's a lot of people that travel to Michigan.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that travel to Minnesota, Wisconsin to go do that. It's great. It's an epic place to go do that. I'm not trying to discredit that at all. But you're in East Tennessee smoking some stud smallmouth, and that's a big deal.
They're a beautiful fish, too.
And
I mean,
all
incredibly
kinds.
Healthy, all colorations.
It's a special place. It's an anomaly. Honestly,
yeah,
but you see all kinds of bass, right? You saw bronze bass, you saw black, you saw green, you saw everything.
Those nice
camoed up tiger,
yeah, the
stripes,
camoed up
everything.
Tiger stripe down the cheek. I love that.
It's the best, dude. I think it's the best freshwater fish to go target.
I agree with you. Way better than a shoal bass.
Way better than
smallmouth is
bass.
So much
not
better
quite
than
as good
a shoal
as a
bass.
Spotted bass, I don't know. It's
better than a spotted bass.
Yeah, they are. They're my favorite. They're definitely the favorite.
I already said I like smallmouth. You don't have to dog on my favorite fish.
Oh, that was for Scott. that was for Scott, who's going to listen to this later. What you're hearing is I had a conversation between a couple of guys from Alabama about how there's a bass down there better than the smallmouth up here. And we went back and forth and back and forth, and it came to no end. Obviously, it's not going to, but I love the fact that Hank said that the smallmouth eat today was really cool.
It was really, really awesome fish.
They got their own things going for them. A lot of people compare shoal bass to smallmouth, I think mostly because smallmouth are just what everybody's already heard of.
Sure.
Shoal bass is kind of a unique endemic to the Southeast that I think, you know, we have to be careful about, because there aren't a lot of really good regulations protecting them yet.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked about this with a lot of my friends. Like, it's great to promote your fisheries, and it's great to, you know, celebrate fish biodiversity and want to get people in the water and introduce them to these amazing species. But until our states, like, have solid black bass regulations for our endemics, like, kind of need to press pause maybe on the promotion, because it's like right now the length limit for black bass in Alabama is 12 inches. A 12-inch red-eye bass is 13, 14 years old. A 12-inch largemouth is maybe 6 months old.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, so when you have so much life history diversity and there are different, you know, there's a lot of things to consider when managing fisheries, but if you just manage black bass as a whole, and Georgia's been doing a really good job of pushing for those regulations and stuff. I think Alabama is far behind in a lot of aspects, fisheries management being the least of those. But yeah, I don't know. I think promoting fisheries is great. I think that we also need to be aware of what happens when we don't really have the infrastructure to support all of that, like, fervor. Like, if you just, you know, if you invite everybody to your birthday party and you only have a bag of Fritos, it's not really going to be a good party. So I think
one of my good friends says, you go to Alabama, you got to leave, it's about 2 hours and 20 years behind.
Yeah. we're on slow time in Alabama.
And I'm from Alabama, Florida and Alabama. I love it. It's a great place.
Yeah.
But speaking of, like, the fishing we did today, and, you know, we've already learned a little bit about, you know, how it's coming back and popping back. Well, tell us a little bit about, like, y'all's. I know we got the lodge here. You got the main lodge with three awesome rooms. You got two queen beds in each room. The bathrooms, coffee, sitting area. You got the nice lodge with the full kitchen with two queen beds. What's the program? Like, you have so many guides that guide for you. They pick you up here, guide, you know. What do y'all do? Tell us a little bit about your program here, whether it's Watauga River for, you know, trophy trout, whether it's smallmouth fishing, striper. What all are y'all doing? I know Davis, I guess, is one of your main guides. And or how much are you guiding now, Brownie?
Zero.
Zero. So you can't book Brownie, sorry.
Womp, womp. You know, I had a 25-year run of guiding, and I started to not be as good as I used to be.
And are you as good once? Did you ever
yeah, that's right. I forgotten that that lyric. Yeah, you know, I got it for 25 years, and for a bunch of those years ran the lodge as well, and then I got old and didn't do it as well. We got busier at the lodge. I quit guiding. And I think I do a better job of managing the lodge and hosting folks as a result. So yeah, we do it all. I like to believe that I have, you know, some of the very best guides in the whole guide community that work with me. Everyone around here, and there's a bunch of guides here in East Tennessee now. And there are a lot of good guides around here, and I used to know every single one of them, and now I don't. So I have a crew of about 10 guides that I feel really comfortable calling on and booking, and know that they will do a great trip and take care of my clients. And so, you know, your typical group comes and stays for a couple of nights and fishes for a couple of days. It's a fun kind of low-key atmosphere. You know, folks bring their food, throw it in the outdoor kitchen here, do their own cooking. Of course, we feed you on the river, and we do smallmouth trips, trout trips. Trout's obviously the mainstay on the South Holston and the Watauga. I don't know whether it's good or bad, but we've got quite a striper population as well.
Big controversy.
Yeah.
It's really good when you're catching them.
Yeah, it's great when you're catching them. It's great when you're – it's terrible when you're watching them eat your trout. And so that's kind of our program. We've been doing it for 18 years, and we've got a really wonderful bunch of repeat business and that we're very thankful for. That is our program.
I do want to say one thing, and I'm not trying to brown nose, but I'm going to brown nose a little bit. This place is one of the most special places you will ever encounter. It's right smack dab in the middle of East Tennessee. You wouldn't ever expect it, but this place that Brownie and Susan and their family have established and fought for is a huge deal. And it's an incredible place. And it's you know, everybody that guides for somebody or is a fishing guide of some sort can say, yeah, the waters I fish are the best. That's why I guide here. But there's something about the Watauga River Lodge. When you come stay here and you hang out and you experience the entire thing, aside from the fishing, just come stay here and you witness such a special time. It's like a casino, man. Just keeps you coming back, dude. I mean,
you guys are gambling here.
It's like a casino. It just keeps you're stuck here.
You're hooked.
You just want to stay and keep going and keep doing it because it's just such this special place, man. I struggle with this a lot because it's the hardest thing to describe to people. And I know there's a million people that fish all over the world. The Seychelles, Chile, New Zealand, you name it, whatever. Like, yeah, this is epic. This is such a special place. It's like, dude, we're in the mountains of East Tennessee and Western North Carolina. It's like, you got it right here, man. You can do it right here. And it's, I don't know. I struggle with it a lot trying to put words to it, but this is where I've felt the most. I've lived a bunch of different places. This is where I feel the most comfortable. This is where I feel the happiest mentally. My wife feels the happiest mentally, physically, everything. I don't want to go anywhere. Then you put on what Brownie and Susan have done out here. It's like, sold, man. I don't want to go anywhere. This is it. This is home. This is home to me.
Dave's about to get a bonus. yeah, I do feel like
Brown knows him, boy.
Hey, you're really good at that. Yeah. Somebody didn't want to do it.
I went to corporate USA for a little bit.
Susan and I have talked about it a bunch. I feel like we feel like our God-given gift has been a gift of hospitality, and I've told several people that I had a pretty successful career as a guide, and it wasn't necessarily because I was some rock star fishy guy. It was because I like taking care of people. I like making friends with people. I like having conversation with people, and I like to take care of the people that are at our place. And Susan feels the same way, and I feel like that's what we've done. So we've made friends with almost every client that's ever been through the door, and I think that's what our business has been about. It's been a family thing.
I've not spent a ton of time up here. This is my second trip up here to hang out with you guys. Enjoyed it immensely. Been through the area a few times. Only fished up here one other time, and it was just a short, just little wade fishing one afternoon. But just the two short trips, I mean, I can see how special it is too. You feel that when you're up here. It's not just your place here. It's just like he said, the area, just the whole thing. It's really special. Sure. And I look forward to spending more time. I look forward to bringing some of my, you know, customers and friends up here to fish with you guys, you know, coming up later this year, for my other job.
Yeah,
and spend a little money up here with you.
There you go.
I felt like when we were on the Tallapoosa on Lake Martin, I felt like Brownie and Davis were hosting us, even though we had invited them to fish on our river. Yeah. It's like Davis cooked us a striped bass. Brownie let me smoke his last cigarette. It was like, wow, these guys are incredibly gracious hosts. Wait a minute. I'm the host. What am I doing?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just good people. Good people on top of a great special place. It's a lot of fun for sure. So,
yeah, it starts with the people always. 100%. I mean, this area is special for sure. I'd have to agree with you guys. I've been fishing here since I was like 16, and it's a very diverse fishery. If you guys that are listening have never been here before, you should come check it out for sure.
100%.
How do they get in contact with you, Brownie?
828-208-3428.
Website, they can look at pictures?
For sure, watogariverlodge.com.
Email, any kid email?
Brownie, like a cookie, at watogariverlodge.com.
But it's not brownie like a cookie at watogariverlodge.com. It's just brownie at watogariverlodge.com. Maybe you should get that other one, too, just in case.
Instagram, OnlyFans?
OnlyFans.
OnlyFans. Sure. I don't even know if we have an Instagram. We do have an Instagram page. We're about to get busy on that.
Some socials. I love it.
Well, you guys, if you want to watch pictures. Brownie get busy, follow him on Instagram.
Definitely follow him on Instagram. Don't forget their other little small business they have right up the road here too at the house, Blue Ridge Boat Works. You come here, get to fish out of one of their awesome drift boats.
But they didn't pay us to mention their.
Not today, they did pay us.
They don't get two podcasts about the boat manufacturing, all right?
If you want to hear about the boat manufacturing, listen to the two podcasts ago.
I'm just joking.
Fishing
show.
Come down here, fish with Davis. You can fish out of one of those boats. And maybe you could fish with me out of one of those boats here pretty soon.
Very soon.
I will say, today I told Davis, I said, I was rowing his boat, and I said, man, this feels like I'm sitting in my kitchen. It just felt so, like, comfortable and roomy and, like, yeah, literally roomy. Like, it felt like I was sitting in, like, the comfort of a room. But I had my shirt off, and there was the sun. And
almost instantly.
For a brief moment. Let's
and then he felt like he was...
The boat was in the water.
And then he felt like he was fishing in his shower. A cold shower.
Very cold shower. Yeah,
we got some rain. Yeah.
Hardcore.
But it doesn't last forever.
All right. Everybody's going to go around. Three favorite fishing trips they've done this past year since we were on here last. And then we're cutting this thing out. I went to the Everglades twice and caught my first pike up in New York. Sam.
Oh man, three favorite. That's tough. Everglades is always special. We did that together back in March. That was an awesome one.
Always.
Fishing up here with you guys the last trip was really, really fun, really special. We had a great 2 days of fishing.
Not this trip, the last one.
Well, I mean, this one is also there. But that one was it was my first one, you know, and it was a lot of fun. The third one. It was 24, but it was like
doesn't
since
count.
We did. Huh?
Doesn't count.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
All right, pass and come back.
Tallapoosa.
No, dude. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, you got it. It's going to be yours, too. All
right. Yeah, Tallapoosa.
No repeats.
To me, and I feel like Brownie's about to say this, because as you just heard, Brownie don't fish a whole lot anymore. I feel like I just stole his thunder a little bit. No, Tallapoosa was cool. Tallapoosa was special because it was something I'd never thought of. And y'all showed me and us something new and special.
You can go see photos from that trip in the magazine.
We ate dinner on that trip from a fish we caught out the river.
Yes,
yeah.
Sir.
What's up?
People don't do that anymore. You need to do that every once in a while.
Culture.
It is.
In the South.
On the fly.
On the fly.
Caught on the fly rod.
Culture on the fly with flies.
That was in the South.
Part of,
That was one.
You get it.
You have to say two more of your
two
favorite
more.
Trips.
Well, Alan only said two.
Megas
no,
snap.
I said Everglades
well, you
twice.
You said Everglades twice.
New York.
Okay, Tallapoosa twice. We fished it 2 days.
I was just going to say, you know, I had a chance to think about it. The Tallapoosa is still up there. Up here is still there. But I took a pretty cool trip this summer with my son to Wyoming.
Right.
And the fishing was not that great, but just the cool trip with my son. That was probably – that was my number one this year for sure.
Glad you could remember that after the fact.
I've been drinking a lot of beer. Man, this is my time pass. I told you about my memory leaving me. Don't make
I
fun.
Know. I'm not. Hank?
Well, this year was the year of the bonefish for me. I caught my first bone. DIY in the Bahamas with my homies. There's a group of doctors from Birmingham that didn't ask me about my credentials and invited me to go with them. And it was a lot of fun. They did it right. We stayed on Green Turtle Key, rented a boat, and just like looked for fish and found them and caught them. It was great. Second favorite trip. One of the guys from the Bahamas trip, he's one of my best buddies. We actually bought his house. But always just like getting in a canoe with him is like one of my favorite things in the world. Hugh Cheek, love you, buddy. And then number three would definitely be today.
Today
was really good. It was just like after a long kind of literal dry spell. Getting back in the boat, getting back to this area after, so much change and hurt, and to see it thriving and to see these guys doing what they do so well, and getting to spend some time with Susan and getting to watch Lydia's cast. It was just a very good day. It's just memorable for a lot of reasons. I might write an article about it for the magazine.
Oh, cool.
If you want to, you can go ahead.
I have pictures.
Nice.
That's what I do.
Perfect.
Last but not least, sir.
Well, it's easy because I've only been on three fishing trips this year.
I told y'all.
Tallapoosa was great because it was being with y'all for the first time.
Yeah,
and I was with Stokes, my son, and I also grew up going to my grandparents' lake house, which was 3 minutes from where we stayed. So that was fun. That was kind of going home to see all that country. Did a smallmouth trip up in Virginia with Wesley Hodges and his crew. Super fun. Being out there, not a crazy productive day on the water, but it was just fun being out there. Stokes was also with me. And then I'd say on the proper, that was my third trip with
no
Sam and Davis. And that was real fun. I was happy to row us out of that lightning storm.
Could you imagine if Brownie was in the boat with us today?
We would have fished for like 30 minutes. All right, we got to go, boys. Let's go.
I don't like lightning.
I don't.
Yeah,
either.
Nobody does. Susan, what was your favorite fishing trip this year?
Fishing trips.
What about your favorite trip?
What's my favorite trip? Help me.
We've had a couple of cocktail cruises down the river.
That's true. We normally take a trip out west in the summer.
Definitely.
And we didn't this year because of trying to get this place up and running. So maybe in November, a little western trip.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's right.
Made a plan.
Roll out.
Liddy, you going to come down here and tell us about your favorite three trips?
Mm-hmm. And then the palm reading.
My favorite three trips that I did fishing this year were definitely going home and fishing in New York. Get to fish with my dad every time I go home. Got to see Alan catch his first pike.
Yeah.
So that was cool. We did a lot of carp fishing in the spring with the cicadas.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot of fun. And then I just went to the Everglades last week. Caught some carp and, or not carp.
Huge carp in the
tarpon
Everglades.
Tarpon and snook. Saw some redfish and yeah, that's my top three.
Sick. All right.
You want to mention the new podcast series coming out?
No, because it's going to come out before this. Well, I guess
we can
talk about it after. John's Reading Rainbow Trout Carpacola Bathroom Listener. That's what he called it.
Carpacola.
Reading Rainbow Trout Carpacola Bathroom. It was something like that. Basically, we're creating our magazine into a bit of an audiobook, and you get to listen to a gravelly John voice of him choosing a couple of stories out of each issue that he likes and reading them to you so you can listen to them. Each one's going to be like 25 minutes long or something like that. We're, you know, editing them up and trying to get the magazine out as all different ways as we can. So the hope is that we basically can go back and read every story that we've done with permissions of writers. And the first one was released right before this. You can go back and listen to it. It's got three stories that John read from our previous issue. And there will be more of those coming out. That name is ridiculous. As we go, there will be more coming out. So, yeah, that'll be fun.
And if you like what we're doing,
yeah,
hit that like button. Share, subscribe.
5 stars.
Ring that bell.
All right, thanks, guys.
Hey, a pleasure to have you all here with us.
Yep. Thanks for having us. It was awesome.